Welcome to First Class Fantasy. I am Theo Greminger, and I'm happy to be rejoined by Billy Muzio. Billy's been grinding away, but he has not been on First Class Fantasy for the last couple of weeks. Billy, we missed you, and now you're back, man. And we're not only Billy is back, but we're joined by a good friend of ours and one of the sharper guys out in the fantasy football sphere, Jared Smola of Draft Sharks. Billy and I podcasted with Jared on First Class Fantasy. One of our first guests was Jared. And then I had Jared on press coverage. Jared's gone on pretty much any podcast we've had. Jared's been on at this point. So it's really, really great to have Billy back. It's also great to have Jared in the house. Jared, why don't you let everybody know kind of where they can find your work, what you have going on? Like, what's a weekly schedule for you? You're grinding, man.
Yeah, I'm happy to be back on with you guys. I got to admit, I decline most in-season guest pod appearances because I'm just too damn busy. But I always have to make time to get on with you guys because I do feel like I'm smarter after I talk to you guys every time. And that's the honest truth. Yeah, draftsharks.com for all of my stuff. I do a weekly usage article, kind of looking back at what we learned from usage the previous week. I do a weekly matchups article that's new for this year. Week 7 just went up, and then besides that, I'm just grinding away at the projections that fuel our weekly rankings. They fuel our My Team page, which is going to take those weekly projections, apply them to your league scoring system, and sort of give you customized start sit advice.
And Billy was big time on this player, and I drafted a lot of this player as well. But you guys, a couple years back, Jared, you kind of like made a – you already had a name going for yourself, but you made a bigger name when you had your comeback player of the year, and it was Cooper Kupp. You guys at Draft Sharks told everybody to draft him. And at the time, he was the second highest drafted wide receiver on his team when you guys made the big, bold call. This year, you guys made another really strong call in the summertime. Why don't you talk about – the performance of Keenan Allen, and what did you slap on him this year? Your big award, preseason award or prediction, however you want to call it.
Yeah, Keenan Allen was our comeback player this year, so we've been doing well there. Happy to see how well he's done. Just liked it was a buy on the Chargers offense more than anything else. I think that's worked out under Kellen Moore. I think we're seeing Keenan Allen, even before Mike Williams went down, he was the focal point of that passing game. That's going to continue. So, just fingers crossed he stays healthy, because if he does, I do think he's going to, continue to be a top five fantasy wide receiver the rest of the way.
Love it. And Billy, you've been doing something really cool on Saturday nights with Bradley Stalder. You and Bradley have like a history of podcasting together for years and years before. Now you guys are back together and you're doing something very cool, YouTube only content right here at Player Profiler. Why don't you tell everybody about that?
Yeah, we decided to continue doing the Dominator through the season, doing a lot of start sit AMA questions on Saturday night. I had like probably a dozen plus people reach out to me on Twitter, Discord, asking if we could do it again. They missed it because we used to do it at like midnight Eastern every Saturday night. And it was this kind of became this reoccurring podcast that by chance just kind of took off because everyone was sitting there doing lineups late at night. And we don't do midnight Eastern anymore. We're more like a 9 p.m. Eastern, but it is definitely, I'd say it's been catching like wildfire. We usually have 100 plus people on live asking questions. We try to answer every question. We say it's a 30-minute pod. We have yet to record under 55 minutes because we just continue to answer every single question before we log off. And so we do get to every single one of them. And it's been a good time.
What time are you going this Saturday evening, Billy?
I think it's going to be 9 o'clock Eastern again. I'm heading to the coast for my daughter's birthday for the weekend. I'm going to be recording from the ocean. So I think we'll get a nice little sunset there in the background, Theo.
Recording in the ocean would be even cooler. Can we get like Billy on like a raft or something?
You want like no shirt and everything? Like,
water boys. Shirt is optional. Completely optional. Completely optional, and the kind of boat, it could be a canoe. Wherever you can set up and maintain a Wi-Fi signal. But Jared, this is a great week to have you on, and we have to bring in the heavy hitters. This is a tough week for fantasy managers. You have Bye-mageddon. This is the first time this season that we have six teams on byes, and there are some impactful names that are going to be missing out of our lineups this week. And you also have the injuries continue to pile up. And right now we have some question marks on some guys, which makes it even more difficult. Whether you had Tuesday or Wednesday night waivers, choosing how to spend your money, your fab money or your waiver wire, you know, rolling list allocation, that was tough because you don't know whether some of these guys are going to play or not. So this was a really tough one. But looking at the season as a whole, you guys do a ton of work on your rankings and your projections at Draft Sharks, like we do at Player Profiler. Who's the player that's like the biggest pleasant positive surprise for you? A guy that maybe you weren't that high on in the preseason, or maybe you thought was going to be okay, but it's just blown you away with their performances.
Yeah, I think Puka Nacua and I think Raheem Mostert are just too easy for this. I went with Jared Goff, who I just like think that. He's been a solid fantasy asset, better than I thought. And I think what he's done for the rest of that offense, you know, Sam Laporta comes to mind immediately. I think, you know, it's a reason to maybe be optimistic about Jameson Williams down the stretch, just how well Jared Goff is playing. He's sitting on a career high 69.5% completion rate. He's averaging 8 yards per attempt. He's actually second in Pro Football Focus passing grade right now, behind only Tua Tagovailoa. Goff is quarterback 5 himself in fantasy points, and he even had a nice fantasy outing on the road last week, which is, you know, always kind of the bugaboo with Jared Goff. He can't do it on the road, but he had a nice game in Tampa Bay. So another tough test for him this week against Baltimore, but I do think he's playing well enough to just continue to support all those weapons in Detroit.
Yeah, and Billy, we talked about Ben Johnson, about what a great offensive mind he was. We talked about that in several shows this summer, and it's really coming into shape. It doesn't really seem to matter who's out there personnel-wise. Detroit is efficient, and they're putting up fantasy points every single week. Your thoughts on Goff rest of the season, Billy?
Yeah, I definitely think he's a quarterback one locked in. I was high on him compared to ECR in the projections model this offseason. And I do think that Jared touched base on his road and home game splits. That's a real thing. I mean, this is like, you know, Jekyll and Hyde typically. And like you mentioned, last game was promising. If he can just string together a few more of those this season, I think we're looking at, you know, a top seven, potential top eight all season long, as long as he has his weapons healthy. I do want to see them get more involved in the running backs, like getting them more involved in the passing game. And so I think that will at least help him with, you know, the accuracy and also kind of check down when he gets in trouble. But I think it's promising for the rest of the season. I mean, Lions are sneaky, really sneaky, you know, contenders to win that whole division.
Jared, over under quarterback 7.5. Where does Jared Goff finish?
I would have to go over, you know, worse than, just because he still doesn't run. I think there's enough of these guys, you know, that will probably just outscore him based on their rushing. You know, Sam Howell comes to mind. Not that he's done a whole lot rushing, but he's been super productive in fantasy as well. He can run the ball. It's a pass heavy offense. I think Goff will be, you know, somewhere around like quarterback 10 rest of the way.
Yeah, I like that. And let's stick with Sam Howell because he's been a positive surprise for me. And that's one guy I was going to bring up, but I'm happy to hear your thoughts. Right now, Sam Howell is comfortably inside of the QB1 line. Depending on your scoring, he's probably right around quarterback 10, quarterback 11. And he's had some really, really fun weeks. And we haven't seen any production from Jahan Dotson. And Terry McLaurin's been disappointing. So he's doing it in other ways with other players stepping up. And he has a little bit of rushing upside. Is Sam Howell a guy that's a locked-in quarterback 1 starter for you, Jared? And then Billy, take it away as well.
I wouldn't say locked in just because it's tough to trust because I don't feel like he's playing that well, right? Like he's scoring better in fantasy than how he's playing, which is always tough to count on. But
we're
like
not playing real life football though, Jared.
Exactly. We're playing this fantasy. Yeah. I think Howell's been a top 13 quarterback in 5 of 6 weeks so far. And he's been, you know, he does run a little bit. He's benefiting from Washington being super pass heavy. You know, the defense is bad. So they're, you know, in higher scoring games playing from behind. He does, you know, his schedule coming up now, his next 5 games, Giants, Eagles, Patriots, Seahawks, Giants. So like as we work through these bye weeks, like how I wouldn't call him a locked in quarterback one, but he is definitely someone worth rostering to use, you know, in spot start situations when your starter is on bye. He's a great fill in. So he should definitely be rostered in most leagues at this point.
Billy, we're using Sam Howell in one team we split together. Your thoughts on him? Same question as I asked Jared. Optimistic about Sam Howell or kind of tempering your expectations?
I think tempering expectations. He's like quarterback 15 season to date right now in fantasy points per game. He's definitely had some flashes. It kind of reminds me of kind of a more efficient Blake Bortles. We're getting a lot of that garbage time touchdowns. And it just happens to be working for fantasy. Like you said, real life quarterback, not really doing that great. But in terms of fantasy, he's putting up numbers. We saw quarterback 8 last week, quarterback 5 the week before, 13 week 4. And he had his blow up game against Buffalo. But the thing about it is his schedule does get tough. He's got Philly week 8, New England week 9. That's going to be tough for him in both those games. Dallas week 10. And then he gets the Jets again week 16. So there's some tough matchups ahead of him. And so I do think he's going to struggle in a few of these outings. And so I have him probably as a mid-range quarterback too.
Yeah, and I think that inconsistency kind of stands out with him, where, like, you bring up Philly, like, that Philly game was really positive for him. He played very, very well. But the week before against Jared's Buffalo Bills, it was like, yikes, the guy can't see a pass rush coming, sacked 9 times in that game. So I think it's kind of a comfort level. When you get down to, like, the bottom of the barrel QB1s, the high-end QB2s, they're there. That's why they're there for a reason. There's a little bit of inconsistency. But Howell at least gives me a ceiling, but that's kind of a scary floor. Jared, how about a guy that you were bullish on that it's just gone south, either usage-wise or just performance-wise, a huge disappointment for you?
Yeah, Rashad White's been one of my biggest misses of the season, and the work has been there. You know, we got that part of it right. He's played 77% of the Bucs offensive snaps. He's averaging 14 carries, 3.4 targets per game, but he's just been super inefficient on the ground, which is really a carryover from what we saw as a rookie last year. I was kind of betting on him just being better in year two, because I did think he was a pretty intriguing prospect coming into the NFL, and, you know, we do see guys get better in their second seasons, but it hasn't happened for Rashad White. We'll see what happens with that backfield going forward. Last week was weird. You know, White, he still dominated playing time. He still played 79% of the Bucs offensive snaps, but, you know, he out-carried Keyshawn Vaughn only 7-6, 4 targets for Rashad White to 2 for Keyshawn Vaughn. The good news for Rashad White going forward is that Keyshawn Vaughn sucks. Like, he's probably even worse than Rashad White. So, like, even if White continues to be bad, like, maybe he hangs on to enough work to at least be, you know, usable as a low-end fantasy starter, but he's been disappointing so far.
Yeah, our two sites were both ahead of consensus on him, and I think Rashad White's a massive miss right now. You bring up Keyshawn Vaughn, like, Keyshawn Vaughn siphoning off some work from him is scary, and, you know, we had Jim Coventry on press coverage the other day and talked about Chase Edmonds coming off the IR and potentially taking even more work, making it a little more of a committee. Billy, how scared should we be about Rashad White right now?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat with Jared here. This was a big miss. The volume was supposed to be there, and he was supposed to be more efficient based upon the offensive line becoming more healthy. None of these things have happened. It just doesn't look like he's going to, you know, be much more than I don't even think he's at 4 yards per carry right now. I don't have it pulled up in front of me, but I think he's probably just under it. But it's a little troublesome when you think about, you know, the amount of volume he's getting and the lack of production that he has seen. We have running backs that are really hyper efficient that are doing more with less. And when you get this much volume and you can't produce, things are bound to change. So if we don't see something soon with him, then I could see a committee happening more and more as the season progresses, even if Vaughn is bad, and they may add him running back in the mix if it gets to a point. So I'm not confident right now with Rashad White for the remainder of the season.
Yeah. It's super, super tilting for Rashad White managers in both dynasty and in redraft. He's the perfect kind of guy to throw into a 2-for-1 trade for somebody else while he's still maintains value. I think that's the way I would handle Rashad White in the trading league. We're going to talk to Jared and Billy, and we're going to talk about a lot of players going to help us get through week 7 and also try to react to some of this recent usage after we hear a word from our sponsors.
Hey, we're all starting new fantasy leagues all the time. And more often than not, where do we start our fantasy leagues at Player Profiler? On Sleeper. Because it's the best. You can imagine my excitement when I saw Sleeper rolled out. Sleeper picks, baby. And game stacking is the path to positive returns with these pick 'em games. Find that sneaky shootout and set most of the players to go over their projection for that week. Or you find a game going to get dragged into the mud and take every member of the passing game for less than their projections that week. And if you pick up to 8, that's how you 100x your payout on Sleeper. It's called the Hail Mary. So if you use promo code UNDERWORLD, you get a $100 instant deposit match. Check out Sleeper's terms and conditions for details. These Sleeper picks are live in over 25 states. Yeah, buddy.
Welcome back to First Class Fantasy. I'm Theo Greminger, joined as always by Billy Muzio and our guest Jared Smola of Draft Sharks. We got to talk about something important here. I'm going to take my medicine here because Billy, any chance he gets to you know, rub my face with it. Before the season, I made a bet with Billy, $350, on Jaxon Smith-Njigba finishing as a top 36 wide receiver. Billy has given me, and listen, I'm going to take an L on that unless there's something wild happen. Unless he goes Amon-Ra St. Brown in the second half of the season, then I'm going to take an L on that. You know what, Billy, you win one, you know, hat tip. But Jared, Billy's given me this opportunity to run it back here. I don't know if he's being a friend here or he's just being greedy. I can't really read him. Jaxon Smith-Njigba, second half of the season, or we could say, you know, week seven on. Jaxon Smith-Njigba, is he a top 36 wide receiver? Last week, and I'll say this, we love when we see guys see a usage change post bye week because that makes self-scouting come into mind. It's not something random. You self-scout, you get more guys involved. Jaxon Smith-Njigba was 4 catches for 48 yards, I believe, but there was some season highs in a number of metrics, which isn't great. But do we think that this is a trend where he's trending up, or you don't trust it?
Yes, season high route rate for JSN last week, 78%, which is that's like a nice number. If he can stay there the rest of the season, I think you got a shot, Theo, to get him inside the wide receiver 36 line. A season high average depth of target for JSN. Again, 7.4 yards, not great, but better than the 3.3 he was at over the first 4 games of the season. And what happened is we saw Seattle run more 3 wide receiver sets. They were at 71% of their offensive snaps in week 6 were 3 wide receiver sets. That was up from 53% over the first 4 games of the season. I do think the injuries on the O-line forced them to have to play more 2 tight end looks early this season to, you know, get some blockers out there because, you know, they were missing both their tackles. They got one of them back last week. So I do think JSN's trending up. I like him as a sneaky starter this week. I know it's unbelievable that he's reached that level, but he has. Because, if that playing time maintains and he gets the Cardinals, good matchup, DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett on the injury report this week, what we'll see about them. But I do think I think he's got a shot. I wouldn't want your side of the bet, Theo, top 36, but I think he has a shot.
Billy, care to gloat?
You know, I think Anthony says it perfectly. It's a perfect house money bet, right? I got nothing to lose here outside of the money that you're already paying me. So that being said, I don't like his chances while I'm making the bet here. So I do think that everything we saw last week, when we talked about all these career highs so far in the NFL, he still only finished as wide receiver 44. And so it's going to take, you know, more than that on a weekly basis for him to eclipse this number. We're looking at probably, you know, 7 targets, probably 4 to 5 receptions and at least 50 yards every week on a minimum. He's going to need a couple touchdowns here and there. And so he's going to need to see more snaps. It breaks down to it. I mean, he did see 70.3 last week. Prior to that, his high was 56.9. And so we're going to want to see him closer to that 80% mark on a week-to-week basis for him to get closer to this wide receiver 3 mark. And I just don't have the faith it's going to happen week-to-week with Seattle.
Listen, guys, the thesis was always second half JSN. I just didn't talk about it as much during the preseason. That was always the thesis. I just wanted to have a little bit of drama with it. But Jared, you mentioned you're starting him in a couple places. Again, now that we have 6 less teams this week and some banged up rosters, who are a couple guys that you find yourself kind of excited to start this week that maybe in another week you might be on your bench?
Yeah, there's a lot of guys I'm starting that I'm not excited to start. Darius Slayton comes to mind in one main event league. Oof. I'm not going to recommend him, but I'm forced. The two guys I had here, the first one is Roshan Johnson, who I was actually really excited about this week, but then he didn't practice on Wednesday. He's still out with that concussion. So I don't even want to talk about him too much because he seems really iffy to play on Sunday. I do like him if he does play. I'll throw out Latavius Murray, who is actually coming off season highs in both carries and snap rate. I think, you know, Damian Harris leaving that game early had a lot to do with that, but Harris is not going to play this week. Harris and Murray have combined to average 9 carries and almost 2 targets per game this season, including most of the goal line work for Buffalo. So I do think Murray's going to pick up most of that. So we're talking about a guy who, you know, is probably going to get 10 to 12 touches in a decent matchup against New England. The Patriots have kind of been a middling matchup for running backs so far. So I think, you know, that's in this week, that's enough to make, you know, Murray someone you can throw in there as an RB3 or a flex play.
let's stick with before you give your names, Billy. Let's stay on this topic of Buffalo running back, because this was on the show sheet. Let's stick with it. James Cook is a guy that steamed up big time during the summer. It's a guy that I drafted a lot of. I have a lot of, and in both Dynasty and in redraft. And we felt really good at the beginning of the year. The Washington game, it's been all downhill since. This past week, Latavius Murray and him were basically 50-50, and routes run was like James Cook 15-13, which doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. Try to wrap, you know, your head around this, Jared. What to make of James Cook? And is this something where, like, James Cook is an RB3 now, or is he still safely inside the RB2 line for you?
Yeah, this was one I stayed away from for most of the summer, especially as Cook was rising. He's a sub 200-pound back that never was anything close to a workhorse in college. I think he topped out at like 113 carries at Georgia. So I just didn't buy him dominating the Bills backfield. I still think last week's passing game usage was kind of fluky, and that Cook's going to remain the primary pass catcher there. And I think that's going to be enough to keep him, you know, it's like a low end RB2 in PPR leagues. So I think he'll be fine. If Cook is your biggest problem at running back on your team, your team's in, you know, pretty good shape going forward.
Billy, your thoughts on the Buffalo backfield?
Yeah, it's kind of a mess. It just seems to be Buffalo doesn't want to use running backs. Like, week in, week out, season after season, we see this now. And even when we think that the stars are aligning for James Cook and they're going to have to get him more involved because they got crusty running backs behind him, they just don't. And we look at the running backs who have left now and who have performed well in other situations, like Zach Moss right now, who has done well inside Indianapolis. I'm starting to believe now it's not just the running backs. It's just more of how they're being utilized and how they're deploying them out of the backfield. We all know James Cook is a very viable pass catcher. We know he is actually, you know, a great runner. And so we're just not seeing him be deployed as such. They continue to run up the middle with, you know, Lat Murray, and it was Damian Harris before. And so I am not confident in James Cook's rest of season. It was probably one of my biggest misses and projections as well. I was high on him. And so I hope it changes in the second half and they look at it and they say, hey, now we're down to these two backs and we need to get them more involved. And we need to utilize their skill sets a little bit better. You know, now we have a lightning and thunder per se, and we're going to be able to kind of, you know, more accurately project what they're going to do for the rest of the season.
Billy, how about a couple of guys this week that you're putting in your lineups? Same question as Jared, like your sneaky starts for this week.
I mean, sneaky, kind of down and dirty in the grind that's available in most
skanky
leagues.
Skanky starts.
Skanky. Yeah, this is a skanky one. Darrington Evans. And there's stuff. I'm in the league that's where I skanky. Have to. But for Jared's point, I mean, I have leagues where I have Roschon Johnson, who was, you know, top 12 in my projections model this week. And if he doesn't play, that opens up a lot of opportunity for Darrington Evans behind Foreman. We know Foreman's not much of a pass catcher. He's been utilized more this year as a pass catcher in terms of like target share than he has in his career. But Darrington Evans has the ability to catch the ball. He did see one target last week. He took it to the house, not house, but took it for 34 yards. And so he didn't have a lot of snaps, only 29.2%. But if we do see Roschon Johnson out, I think they're going to lean on him a little bit more this week as he gets more involved. So I'm not comfortable starting him per se, but it is someone, if you're down, dirty, and desperate, that you can lean on him, I think.
Yeah, and for me, I'm looking at, you know, if you listen to this as a podcast, we're recording on Thursday, so the game would have already happened. But I'm looking at Derek Carr. This is a guy that I added in a few leagues. And New Orleans has been like, if you take away the New England game where it was like 33-0, they haven't cracked 20 points, I think only one time as a total for a team. It's been completely low scoring. But there's some signs of life. Derek Carr had a season high in passing yards this past week. Went over 300. He's got healthy options now at running back with Alvin Kamara, gets back Jamal Williams. And then, you know, obviously Chris Olave, Michael Thomas, and Rashid Shaheed. But I'm going to cram in Derek Carr in a few lineups. Jacksonville, it's funny. We think about like these defenses that are like complete train wrecks in their secondary, and people often talk about the Chargers and the Broncos. But Jacksonville is second to last in pass defense. They're allowing like 270 passing yards a game now. Minshew Magic last week it was not great, but he did pass for like I think 325 passing yards. So I'm kind of confident in Derek Carr tonight, and I'm also on the same token, I'm using Rashid Shaheed in a number of spots. I think the usage looked great last week. This is exactly the type of game that they're going to scheme Rashid Shaheed into a few manufactured touches, potentially as a runner. And downfield targets, the guy had a 50-plus yard catch last week. He had a 25-yard-plus touchdown catch. He's extremely explosive. So I'm looking for Rashid Shaheed and Derek Carr to get me through this disgusting bye week. Any thoughts on the New Orleans Saints combination, Jared?
Yeah, I mean, I like Shaheed. He's a fun player. The Jags, too, by the way, are down a corner tonight. Tyson Campbell's out for them. My concern with Carr is their O-line is all sorts of banged up. They're going to be missing, I think, both their starting tackles tonight, and I think one other starter as well. So that'd be my concern, on top of the fact that it's a Thursday night game and those things never go according to plan. But I get it. I mean, I have Carr like around like quarterback 15 or 16 in my rankings this week, so he's definitely going to be someone that a lot of owners are forced to start.
We had huge news this week, Billy. Kyler Murray, who a number of people, said maybe he doesn't play at all this year. Why rush him back? He's back at practice, and they've opened up the IR return window on him. He could be back anytime. Apparently, he practiced completely in full yesterday. I'm excited. You think about Josh Dobbs, the production he's had, where he's been a mid QB2. He's had multiple games with over 40 rushing yards. This is kind of exciting to have the potential for Kyler Murray in the second half of the year. What are your thoughts on Murray's potential impact on Arizona's offense and our fantasy teams?
Yeah, it's definitely a positive for any of the pass catchers. I want to see, from a fantasy perspective, I think that we need to kind of temper our expectations, because we're not going to see him run as much as we used to see him, especially coming off that injury. I'm not sure you can 100% trust it yet. It's probably more of a psychological thing, and then they're not going to want to risk injuring him when it could potentially become trade bait. He could potentially be a part of the mix. We don't know what they're going to do for next year, but there's a lot of politics involved in this decision as well. And so I'm not entirely certain that we're going to see, that quarterback one week to week basis from him that we used to see. I'd say pretty consistently, probably like that quarterback 15 range, and probably have some spike weeks ahead of him. But I definitely think from the pass catcher's perspective, it's definitely a positive.
I might go a little more bullish than you, Billy. I think even if they're not scheming him for manufactured design running plays, it's kind of in Kyler Murray's nature to take off and run. And those are the type of plays where he rips, off big yardage. And we have seen him have a lot of success with Hollywood Brown. Rondell Moore played fine with him. Now you add Michael Wilson. I think I'm a little bit excited about this one. And he's the kind of guy that I think could be a little bit higher than that QB 15 range. I think he's probably closer to QB 10. Jared, where would you be at on this?
Yeah, I think QB 10 to QB 15 kind of encapsulates his range, right? Like, yeah. I think he has a chance to be a low-end quarterback one. It's going to come down to the rushing. I think it's interesting that Josh Dobbs is, like, near the top of the league in designed carries. Yeah. And he's obviously an athletic guy, but I wonder if, like, they're just installing an offense that, like, Kyler can kind of just, slide right into, and they can, still call those designed runs for him. So we'll see about that. I do think, just the Cardinals offense in general has not been the disaster that we thought it was going to be. So that, that's good news for Kyler's chances when he gets back.
Drew Petzing seems really sharp. And yeah. I know we don't have like a huge sample size, and there's been offensive coordinators that have kind of tricked us in the past, and then the league adjusts and it all comes down to normal. But like you said, Jared, like personnel wise, this was nothing. And we've had some good fantasy success there. Hollywood Brown's in our lineups. James Conner had some weeks. So I think I'm somewhat optimistic. How about Hollywood Brown? Let's stick with him. The return of Kyler Murray, does that bump him up for yeah. you? He's already seeing a really high target share.
Yes, I actually have Hollywood Brown here. Down is a guy I know we're going to talk about later, about guys who could really ascend over the second half of the season. And Brown is a guy I have because his usage has been awesome. He is 11th among all wide receivers in targets. He's 9th in target share. He's 5th in air yards, but he's just 22nd in PPR points per game. So he's been fine, but I think there's still room for him to grow. I mean, just last week, I don't know if you guys caught that Cardinals Rams game, but Josh Dobbs missed him twice. It was 100 yards and 2 touchdowns that Brown had sitting right there, and Dobbs just couldn't hit him. Dobbs has kind of turned back into Josh Dobbs over the last 2 weeks. So I do think, and like you said, Theo, Kyler and Brown have the history together from their college days. So I think Brown is definitely someone who's going to ascend once he gets a healthy Kyler Murray back.
Billy, anything to add on Hollywood?
Yeah, he's been a pleasant surprise. A lot of targets. He actually has 100% route participation, which is really hard to do as a wide receiver. And so that's number one in the league. If we continue to see that with the increased efficiency of the targets, we're going to see a much better second half of the season.
So we had a interesting usage change in Houston. Damian Pierce, for the first time, played essentially behind Devin Singletary. I know there's a few metrics where he led him in, but Devin Singletary had two targets to Damian Pierce's zero. The carries were almost even. The snaps went to Devin Singletary. What is true, guys? Is it true that it's a bye week? When we get back from a bye week, the offensive line is going to be a little healthier and they're going to go back to Pierce? Or is there kind of a changing of the guard here and Devin Singletary is going to be the running back that you want in Houston post bye week? Jared, which way do you lean on this?
Man, I think Damian Pierce is good, and I don't think Devin Singletary is very good. But, you know, you look at the metrics so far this season, and Singletary is beating Damian Pierce in yards per carry, yards after contact per attempt, rush yards over expected per attempt. So, you know, Singletary's just been the better runner so far, and it's obviously a small sample size. D'Amico Ryans came out after the game and said, you know, he said, our run game was better. It was a complimentary back and forth between Pierce and Singletary. And Ryan said, quote, going to continue to balance both guys out. So I think coming out of the bye week, we're going to see, I'm going to be projecting probably something close to a 50-50 split between these two guys. And that, you know, that's going to make them both, you know, kind of like unexciting RB3s.
But Billy, a 50-50 split where Devin Singletary is getting the targets makes him kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's flex worthy. And I definitely think it's, I mean, last week we saw 52% to Singletary and 35% of the snaps to Damian Pierce. So that was a big shift where in comparison, we used to see like 59% Damian Pierce and more of that 30% range, Devin Singletary. The rushing volume was more 50-50 to Jared's point. We saw 40 to 43%. And so the routes, that's where he's dominating. And so Singletary is seeing 50% of routes for the backfield, where Pierce has only seen, you know, 20 to 30% range. And so if that continues, I think that Jared hit it right on point. They're probably more of RB3s both moving forward.
Let's take it over to Atlanta. We've seen recent positive signs with the passing game. You've seen Desmond Ridder pass for over 300 yards now for back-to-back weeks. You've seen Kyle Pitts have some positive play to him. Kyle Pitts a few weeks ago was a disaster. Now he's tight end 12 on the season in PPR. Jonnu Smith continues to be like an annoyance, but Jonnu Smith is also a top 10 tight end right now. But really the biggest positive for me is Drake London. Drake London has his best game of the season by far this past week. I'm somewhat intrigued by the Atlanta passing game, which is something that I didn't think I'd ever say in the preseason. Jared, your thoughts on this recent trend?
Yeah, intrigued might be a little strong for me, but I mean, I do think like at least Drake London is getting his targets right. I mean, week one was the outlier. He just, you know, was kind of invisible. But since then, you know, he's been well over a 20% target share since week two. So I think London's going to be fine going forward. I think Pitts will be fine going forward. I think, I mean, Jonnu Smith's a weekly tight end one at this point until something changes, right? Like he's out there running the routes, he's getting the targets. So I think you got to stick with him. You know, the Falcons are passing more this year. They're not passing a lot. They're still near the bottom of the league in pass rate over expected. But Atlanta right now, they're minus 8% pass rate over expected right now, which is again near the bottom of the league. But they were minus 13% last year. So they're you know, throwing a bit more this season, which definitely helps you know, these pass catchers.
It's more 2021 Matt Ryan than 2022 Marcus Mariota right now, Billy. Where are you at on Desmond Ridder and the Atlanta Falcons?
I don't trust Ridder at all. I think that he has had a few productive games, but I just, it's not somebody I'm confident ever throwing in my lineup. I know that you and I have him starting this week in one of our spots. I don't feel good about
it. We're not happy about it, but we were low on fab and we needed to add a quarterback. And hey, man, we're going with the hot hand.
Yeah, we got him for a buck. Let's go. Let's see what happens. But I do like the positive trend of consistency now for Drake London. The beginning of the season had me a bit worried because this was a guy I was high on going into the season who saw a near 30% target share last year. Started off the season with like 6%, jumped 28, down to 16. It was inconsistent. And now we have seen you know, three straight weeks of 24% or more, 24 in week four, 24 in week five, 28% in week six. So that is positive. Jonnu Smith has been a surprise for me, but we did talk about them potentially using a lot of 12 personnel when they traded for him. So we are seeing that now kind of come to fruition. And I do think that because the usage of Jonnu Smith, the teams are now utilizing the two tight ends. It's actually opened up more for Kyle Pitts. And now we're seeing them, you know, utilize him a little bit more. We are seeing kind of more towards Jonnu Smith, but we're seeing kind of a shift, at least in the guard, with Kyle Pitts and getting more targets. So that's always promising. So Kyle Pitts finally saw, you know, an above 20% target share this season, week five, 27%. It dipped back down to 14% last week. But I think as long as they continue to use this 12 personnel, I do think that we're safe with, you know, Kyle Pitts and Jonnu Smith on a week-to-week basis, and Drake London.
Let's stay at the running back position here with the Kansas City Chiefs. Isaiah Pacheco caught six passes last week. Pacheco has more receptions now than he did all of last season. And I know it's not a huge number, but it's still a positive change in his usage. Right now, Pacheco is on track to run for over 1,000 yards. And he looks like a dark horse candidate to be an RB1 right now. Same points per game as Derrick Henry. And in PPR, Jared, your thoughts on Pacheco moving forward? How are we treating him?
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think Pacheco is a decent bet to produce as an RB1 the rest of the way. You know, he got ramped up early in the season, coming off, you know, the dual surgeries he had in the offseason. But if you just look at the last 4 weeks, Pacheco has handled 70% of the Chiefs' rush attempts. That's a mark that only three running backs have topped over the course of the entire season. And as you said, Theo, you know, he has a 10% target share over the last 2 weeks, which is, you know, good enough. So if you just look since week four, Pacheco is 12th among running backs in expected PPR points. So he's getting, you know, low end RB1 usage. I think he's a pretty good player in a good offense. So, man, I think he has a good chance to score as a top 12 RB the rest of the way.
Billy, your thoughts on Pacheco? And I will add, Billy, I think it's funny because we talked about like the playoff game where he had his season high in receptions against Cincinnati in the playoffs last year. Similar game to this past one where he gets like six balls. And everybody's like, oh, no, it's Mahomes. Mahomes was injured. The offense completely changed. That's the only reason they would ever pass to Isaiah Pacheco. But the receiving, maybe I think that opened up the team's eyes to Pacheco being capable of doing this in the NFL. Billy, your thoughts on Pacheco and kind of lessons we've learned about him?
Yeah, I think it also has a lot to do with it. The receiving core has just been trash, honestly, and they have to get him more involved. I don't want to say that let's see what happens when Mecole Hardman arrives, because it's Mecole Hardman.
I think that's fair, Billy. Mecole Hardman over Justin Watson.
Correct. And we're going to see him being utilized in that, you know, short intermediate routes, behind the line of scrimmage, bubble screens, which is going to eat into the running back targets is what it's going to do. And so I do think it probably eats in that a bit, but let's see how they get him involved. Let's see how they use him before we go that route. But I do want to just say that that's a possibility. I do have Pacheco as a RB1 for the rest of the season. And if you look at this week, like, I'm going to be adjusting my preliminary numbers, but he actually came in as like RB6 this week. I have him ahead of Bijan. He's actually ahead of, there's some names I looked at. I'm like, holy crap. Like, that's pretty high this week. Like, he's ahead of DeAndre Swift with the matchup. But they're very close with Swift and I have him just behind Travis Etienne this week. So yeah. Implied total, the game's 49, you know, the Chargers are definitely beatable on the ground. And so it's looking like Pacheco is going to be, you know, an RB6 this week, probably.
I think he's a great candidate for you to go and try and trade for, because I think a lot of people are expecting the regression, but it's like, why are we betting against the Chiefs offense? Why are we betting against, Pacheco when he's shown us nothing but positives this year? Jared, let's talk about Zay Flowers. This past week in London, Zay Flowers catches his first NFL touchdown. He's led Baltimore in targets, I believe, in 4 weeks. He's had three double-digit target weeks as a player, and now he finds the end zone. Is Zay Flowers a wide receiver too, rest of the season? Where does he kind of fall in line for you?
Yeah, he's a really solid wide receiver too for me. I mean, we talk about the Chiefs wide receivers sucking. The Ravens wide receivers suck outside of Zay Flowers, right? I mean,
they're awful.
Nelson Aguilar is
the second best one.
Exactly. So Zay Flowers right now, 16th among wide receivers in targets. He's 13th in target share. The other thing for Zay Flowers, he has the sixth best remaining wide receiver schedule per our adjusted fantasy points allowed numbers. So that's going to work in his favor too. I think you're in good shape if you know he's your wide receiver too every week.
Billy, anything to add on Zay Flowers?
Yeah, every week I look at my projections and it's say, man, he comes in so high every week because of the target share. And I usually manually adjust down just based upon the inefficiency we've seen from like a scoring format. We haven't seen him score a lot. And so we have to take that down because in order for us to, you know, get inside the top 13, 14, we usually have to score. It's a guy that I have on my list that I circle every week that I need to like manually look at based upon the model. But you have to like, from a utilization standpoint, you got to love what we've seen. Just dominating snaps, dominating touches, another wide receiver who has seen 100% route share. And which again is very hard to do. I know we just talked about two of them today, but it's not, you talk about like players like, you know, Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase, they're seeing like 98%, you know? And so, to be on the field every single snap that they're out there, you know, throwing the ball and running routes is an impressive stat. And fantasy points are bound to come. So I always have him used as a high end wide receiver two. The projection model usually spits him out as a back end wide receiver one. And I have to adjust down, but, it's, if he can start scoring, we're looking at a week to week, you know, top 15 wide receiver.
Yeah, and I'll add, you know, you bring up the wide receivers being a disappointment. I also think the fact that J.K. Dobbins, you know, got injured, that helped the usage for Flowers because he gets those manufactured ones right around the line of scrimmage that may have gone to Dobbins. At least they showed it in a very small sample size in game one. Let's pivot over to the tight end position. Cole Kmet, obviously the scoring has upticked recently, but he's tight end 5 right now in PPR. We're seeing a switch from Justin Fields over to Tyson Badgett. A lot of mystery over there about what Badgett's going to be able to handle in a full game. Is Cole Kmet someone that you're starting on a weekly basis with Badgett behind center, or is this something where we've got to really adjust our expectations, Jared?
I think you got to adjust expectations. I mean, we don't know much about Tyson Badgett. I can't imagine it's going to be very pretty. the thing with tight end, like Kmet has a 20% target share right now. If he hangs on to that with Badgett, then like he's gonna be usable just because the position is so bad. But I mean, he's not exciting, at least until Fields gets back.
Very cool story with Badgett. His dad is one of the best arm wrestlers ever in the United States. It's like his persona. And Badgett was at D2 Shepherd, which, you know, that's they have a number of Division II schools in West Virginia and Pennsylvania. And apparently Badgett had everybody trying to get him to transfer up, had opportunities to go play in the Big Ten and the SEC, stayed at Shepherd, makes the Senior Bowl, undrafted free agent, he's starting. It's really a wild story. But Billy, it's got to make you really, really nervous if you're starting Chicago Bears pass catchers this week, besides DJ Moore, who I think is pretty insulated with his target share.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons, honestly, why I also mentioned Darrington Evans earlier. It's because when you usually have a quarterback, they're going to lean on the rushing game a bit. So we probably see a heavier utilization from both backs. That being said, whenever we have a rookie or inexperienced quarterback, they typically use the running backs as outlets and the tight end as an outlet. So I think that if anyone is going to be safe, and I'm not saying they're going to be safe, but if there was a chance that anybody was going to be safe this week, it's going to be the running back and the tight end probably, or the slot receiver. So we do have some outs, but I'm not confident in it.
The Vegas Raiders at least is not like a daunting matchup. It's a, you know, they can get to the quarterback, but it's not like some overwhelming matchup. I'm interested to see how this thing goes. A quick question in the chat. Redraft, half point PPR, Logan Thomas versus the Giants, or Pat Freiermuth coming back this week against the Los Angeles Rams? And who would you rather have rest of the season? It's Muth rest of the season. Muth rest of the season.
Yeah. I'd rather have Freiermuth the rest of the season just based on, you know, what he did in his first 2 years, just buying the talent there. Logan Thomas is an older guy who's had injury issues. Even this week, I have Freiermuth one spot ahead of Logan Thomas in my rankings. Again, just kind of betting on the talent. I know it's been a slow start for Freiermuth, but it's also a really good matchup against the Rams. The Rams are 31st in our adjusted fantasy points allowed to tight ends.
Billy, anything to add on Muth versus Logan Thomas this week in a Dominator preview with this question?
Yeah, Rams are one of the worst against the tight end position again in the league. So I would lean against – I'd go for the matchup here. Whenever you have this close of a – I use tiebreakers with matchups and fantasy points allowed. So I'm going to take the guy facing the Rams.
Right now, the wide receiver three on the season is Adam Thielen. This is like as big of a storyline as Puka Nacua. Thielen was a guy that was being drafted, but being drafted in the double-digit rounds pretty much any single format. We wanted to search for the number one pass catcher in Carolina. There was DJ Sharkhive, Jonathan Mingo Love, but Adam Thielen has been unbelievable. He's having his best season since 2018. Now they head into the bye. Jared, thoughts on Thielen? How wild is it? Expectations moving forward.
Yeah, man, every year there's like one guy who just comes out super high in my projections and I just don't want to believe it and I don't draft him. And Adam Thielen was that guy this year. So it's just like, you know, he's been a target earner in the past and there was no one else there in Carolina. The Panthers gave him a pretty big contract. I just didn't want to believe it. But I mean, he's obviously exceeded, you know, anyone's highest expectations. I mean, the thing with Thielen is he hasn't even really outproduced his usage. Right. Like he's sixth among wide receivers in PPR points per game. He's tied for sixth among wide receivers in targets. You know, the Panthers wide receivers outside of Thielen just aren't good right now. I mean, still have, you know, some faith in Jonathan Mingo. Maybe he gets going in the second half. But, you know, until that happens, I think Thielen's just going to keep soaking up all these targets.
I have a bunch of Mingo. I wish I had a bunch of Thielen. Yeah. Billy, your thoughts on Adam Thielen revival?
Yeah, it's gross, but it's gonna work all season. And as long as we continue to see the running backs banged up too, they're gonna lean on the passing game, which is gonna give Thielen even more opportunities. Not a guy that I was high on, not a guy that I expected to do much. I thought, you know, here he was leaving Minnesota, one of the, you know, pass heaviest offenses, going to Carolina with a rookie quarterback. Situation was gonna be gross. Yeah, he was gonna probably be number one, but what did that really mean going to Carolina? And so I probably say a huge miss on my part in the preseason, but I think it's going to continue. I mean, we see rookie quarterbacks lock into the player. It's working for them because, you know, it is working and they want to continue to have success. And so I think that Thielen is going to be that outlet.
Let's pivot back to Pittsburgh. Oh, and I'll give a quick shout out. My friend Curtis Patrick at RotoViz, he has Thielen in every single league and he liked Thielen in the preseason and people were like, what are you doing? Big hat tip to Curtis. You got it right. Let's pivot back to Pittsburgh. I think it's very interesting. Deontay Johnson comes back from the IR. Okay. This was a guy that steamed up in the summer. And then we talked about Pat Freiermuth, you know, comfortably a top eight or nine tight end when we drafted in the summer. But George Pickens has been a very pleasant surprise. Not to me. I was all over Pickens, but a lot of people were Pickens doubters. Last year, George Pickens had one game where he went over 100 yards receiving. It was like 102 yards towards the end of the season. And he had zero games where he had double-digit targets. He's had two games now with over 125 yards receiving. And he's had two games with double-digit targets. So the usage is trending up. Again, this is a guy who's 22 years old in his second year, and we're seeing a usage bump. How does the return of these two pass catchers affect George Pickens, or does it not have as much of an impact as some people may think? Jared.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting one. I don't know the answer, obviously. I mean, I think George Pickens is a better receiver than Deontay Johnson. If I'm a GM and I can pick one of these guys for my NFL team, I'd go with George Pickens. What I think doesn't really matter. You know, it's what the Steelers think. It's what who Kenny Pickett, you know, wants to throw to. I will say, you know, so George Pickens, over the last four games, he drew a target on 25% of his routes. That number last year with Deontay Johnson on the field was 15%. So, you know, he obviously benefited from Johnson being off the field. The other thing with Pickens is his usage changed a little bit without Deontay Johnson. His ADOT over the last four games was 13.8 yards, which is still a high number, but it was at 15.6 yards last season. So he was running some more of the, you know, shorter intermediate routes without Deontay Johnson off the field. So we'll see if he keeps that role, because if he does, I think he cannot produce Deontay the rest of the way. I also think it's possible that they, you know, go back to featuring Deontay and they're just, you know, sending Pickens downfield on these go balls that he doesn't have a great chance of connecting on with you know, Kenny Pickett.
Your thoughts, Billy?
Yeah, I'm a little less optimistic. If we follow the trends when they're both in the field, Pickens is usually playing second, or I should say when all three of these guys are in the field, Freiermuth, Deontay Johnson, and George Pickens, Pickens is usually a playing third fiddle. He might get second looks at times, but he's going to be consistently underneath that 20% target rate. And so he's been a nice addition to the fantasy teams, but it's because of the volume. And he's seen 33% of the targets in week two, 24 in week three, 26 in week four, 32 in week five. And if you look at the fantasy output as well, is seen kind of this up and down, right? So he was, you know, wide receiver 11 in week two, wide receiver 38 week three, 65 in week four, five in week four. Wide receiver five in week five. So it's been that inconsistent with all of these targets removed from the equation. If we put these guys back into the equation and we have more looks, we have Deontay Johnson, who's always been a target hog. I don't think it's looking that great for Pickens this week. It's going to break down to how healthy both these guys are, in my opinion, because if they're both healthy enough to be on the field and run, you know, their full amount of snaps, then I think Pickens is probably more of a back end wide receiver three this week. But if he is, if they're going to be, you know, maybe playing it safe and maybe having both these guys on snap counts with Freiermuth and Deontay Johnson, then I think that we could potentially see Pickens as more of a back end wide receiver too. I just would have a lot of trouble putting him back inside the top 24.
I think it could be like a big changing of the guard because he scores the game winning touchdown against Marlon Humphrey. You've also got the fact that George Pickens was injured coming off of a major injury last year, you know, a torn ACL at Georgia. Now he's fully healthy. But yeah, when we talk about self-scouting, like Mike Tomlin's usually really sharp at adjusting and giving guys different usage post bye week. So it's going to be very tilting for Pickens managers, for Deontay Johnson managers, and also a little bit for Pat Freiermuth managers. So not all three of them are going to be, you know, fantasy viable. There's just not enough volume there, but it's going to be a lot of fun to see and a lot to talk about. Guys, we're close to an hour mark. So I really want to talk about these guys for the rest of the season that we see as risers and guys that either could be league winners or at least will be big, big parts of our lineups. This is a kind of an open-ended question, but these kind of players can really, really help us out in the postseason, the fantasy postseason, also down the stretch run, making these playoffs. So let's start with Billy Muzio on this one. Who's the guy that you're super excited about in the second half of the year, Billy?
Can you beat the drum for me and just start like this? Right? I've talked about him all offseason. My draft partner, Dave, and I are very high on this guy. He has yet to really see the field, but I do think that when he does see the field, he has game-changing speed. So that's Keaton Mitchell for the Baltimore Ravens. I think that the Ravens are in dire need of a playmaker in the backfield. They're just outside of playmakers, outside of Andrews and Zay Flowers in particular. Those are the only playmakers they have. So they need one more outside of the quarterback position that's going to make an impact. Keaton Mitchell has, you know, CJ2K speed, 4.37 speed out of East Carolina. When he made the 53-man roster, I said, okay, it's on, it's going to happen. Like this is actually, he's getting a chance. That was his biggest hurdle, I think, was making the roster in the preseason. We saw that the nice preseason run where he ended up getting hurt and landing on the IR, it set him back. I think that if he hadn't done that, he'd probably be in the mix right now as the RB2 on the team week-to-week basis. So I think it's a matter of time before he you know, overtakes that RB2 spot, potentially become the RB1. Doesn't have the size to kind of shoulder the load, but you know, anyone with that kind of speed could take it to the house at any given time. Home run plays are hard to keep off the field and, you know, has the ability to catch the ball as well. So I think they need him. I think he has the skill set to succeed. And I definitely think that he can make an impact in the second half.
Smash the like button, everyone. And Billy, wouldn't it be a more fun offense to watch if Gus Edwards just got like, you know, three carries a game and it was just Justice Hill and Keaton Mitchell. And you'd have to watch like the cloud of dust.
Such a plotter. I mean, it's so gross to watch him run the ball every time up the middle and just somehow gets his 4.8 yards, though. It just happens. It's so disgusting.
It's like a bus, guys. It's the Gus bus, and it's not exciting. It used to be like that was cool to be the Gus. Like, no, it's terrible. Jared, give us a guy that you're excited about. And any thoughts on Keaton Mitchell before we move on?
Yeah, a lot of my colleagues at Draft Sharks have been excited about Keaton Mitchell, and I've kind of been the guy tapping the brakes. And you know, for me, it's really the size thing. I'm just like wondering what the upside is. I guess thinking about it, like maybe like Jaleel McLaughlin, like that's kind of what we're hoping for, right? Like he can get 10 touches per game, maybe, you know, break off some big plays. I think, you know, that's probably the upside for Keaton Mitchell. So he's definitely worth stashing because Gus Edwards and even Justice Hill, you know, just haven't been great so far this season. So there's opportunity there. As I mentioned, I had Hollywood Brown as my first guy for this. My other guy is Mike Evans, who, you know, it's been the past 3 weeks. He hasn't helped us much, right? He left week four early with the hamstring injury. He had the week five bye. And then last week he had 49 scoreless yards, but he was close to a big game last week. Had a couple of downfield shots that he almost connected on. He saw another 10 targets in that game last week. That gives Mike Evans 38 targets on a 29% target share in his four healthy games this season. So he's really emerged as Baker Mayfield's favorite target. And to me, Evans looks like he has plenty left in the tank. So he's actually averaging a career high in yards per route run. He's at 2.82. So if he continues to get that type of volume, we know he can make big plays. We know he's a touchdown scorer. I think Mike Evans is at least a wide receiver two rest of the way. And like, I think he has a chance to score as, you know, top 15 wide receiver for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and I'll stay at the wide receiver. I love the Evans call. And last week, there was he could have had another touchdown. Last week, Jared, there was a tipped pass at the line that looked like it was going to be Mike Evans, like wide open. I don't know how he even got that open. So that could have been like an 85-yard touchdown.
Yep.
I'll stay at the wide receiver spot. I'm going to go a little bit younger than Mike Evans, and I'm going to go back to Atlanta. Drake London, I think, could not only be a locked-in starter, but I think he could be ascending and be like a league winner type as the season moves along. There's just a lot to like about him. I don't want to sound meathead-ish, but the eye test with Drake London, like, this is a guy that you see having like a growing type alpha role in this offense. You saw him at the end of last season get increased usage, and now you're starting the last 2 weeks seeing that same usage where he's had 21 targets the last two games. He's had 15 receptions the last two games, 203 receiving yards. And the there's like a continual uptick. Week one was like the nightmare one target game. That's completely behind us. He's been wide receiver 5 and wide receiver 19 the last 2 weeks. I think he's going to finish somewhere between wide receiver 5 and not wide receiver 5, but I think he'll finish somewhere like closer to wide receiver 19 rest of season. And I'm excited about him. I think Drake London's the kind of guy a couple weeks ago where you're like, can I start him? Now you're kind of excited to start him. Do you guys have anything to share on Drake London? No?
He's good. He's good at football. I have no doubts about that. I still think Taylor Heineke would be better for Drake London. He's just a gunslinger. He's like a Ryan Fitzpatrick, right? He's not the best real life quarterback. He's going to make mistakes, but he'll throw it around, and he's, you know, good news for his pass catchers.
Yeah, I think we touched on London earlier quite a bit. I think it's, you know, fits the mold. He's seen the targets, but I agree, Jared. I projected Heineke for 6 games this season, and so I don't think we're going to hit that now, but I would like to see him get more involved.
Yeah, you know, if they lose to Tampa Bay this week, it starts becoming interesting, though, guys, because Ritter did have the 300 yards passing, but he had 3 interceptions last week, so We gotta remember it's real life football as well, and that's a winnable division. Let's go back to Billy. Give us another guy, Billy.
Rashee Rice. This is a guy who we're starting to see finally more and more of. He's by far and away the best pass catcher on this team outside of Travis Kelce. I don't understand why they're not getting him more involved. He finally saw 50% snap share last week, 51.5%. And so he's getting more targets. I mean, when he's on the field, he's actually he's actually being targeted. And so target rate of 32.2%, which is wide receiver 5 in the league. So if we can just get him on the field more and see more targets, and the fantasy points are going to come along. I mean, we all know it's Patrick Mahomes, the Chiefs. It's one of the, you know, better offenses in the NFL. They're going to be throwing the ball. Just get this guy on the damn field more, and he could be potentially a league winner on the second half of the season.
No, I love it. We've talked about Rashee Rice a lot. I've wrote about him in my waiver wire column like since this summer. You just need him to get more usage, Billy, because the talent's there. I mean, he's a very, very good looking football player. Anything to add on Rashee Rice, Jared?
I just hope the McCole Hardman addition isn't, you know, a knock against Rashee Rice. It really shouldn't be. I don't think it's going to be, but we'll keep an eye on that.
Jared, give us another guy that you think could be a real help in the second half of the year.
Yeah, so someone I'd be looking to trade for right now is David Montgomery, who I expect to miss the next two games. I mean, he's not going to play this week. I think he probably misses the week after that. The Lions have a week 9 bye. So I think, you know, Montgomery week 10 is kind of when I'm thinking he's going to be back. So you got to, you know, factor that in. Hopefully that lowers his price if you're trading for him. But if you look from week 10 to week 17, the chart or the Lions have the second best running back schedule. And just, you know, what we've seen from Montgomery when he's been healthy this season, they want to lean on him. They kind of want him to be, you know, the focal point of their offense. So I think Montgomery, if you can, you know, weather the storm of him, you know, missing these next 3 weeks, hopefully he's back week 10. I think he could be a real difference maker down the stretch.
I like that one a lot. I'm going to go with the running back here. I'm going to go with a little less exciting than David Montgomery, but I'm going to go with Chuba Hubbard. I think that Miles Sanders is completely falling apart. We've now seen, a pec injury, a shoulder injury, a groin injury. He's played through it a number of weeks, but you know, now you're starting to see Chuba Hubbard. Last week had his opportunity with Sanders out. He finishes as running back 13 on the week. You've actually had Chuba Hubbard finishing as an RB3 or better in 4 out of 6 weeks this year. This is not an exciting player by any means, but he's a capable pass catcher. And I think in the second half of the year, he's going to be an RB2. And this is the kind of guy that you can trade for him during a bye week for cheap. No one cares about Chuba Hubbard. Even coming off of a big game, I think he's a guy that you can go get in a lot of home leagues. And guys, we've seen in the fantasy playoffs, it's about opportunities and guys who can catch a few passes. Rashad Penny won people leagues. Devin Singletary's won people leagues over the years. Chuba Hubbard could be a guy that we're putting into our lineups during the fantasy playoffs as like RB20. That sort of expectation. Thoughts on Chuba Hubbard, Billy?
Yeah, he's actually, even when we had everybody healthy, he was actually outperforming Sanders, I think, in a lot of metrics. Yeah. And so maybe Sanders was banged up the whole time. I mean, we know he's had preseason injury as well. And so there's a lot to kind of digest here. But Chuba's going to be involved. He's going to continue to be involved. And if he can continue to produce, he's going to see, you know, 40 to 50% of that snap share, even with Sanders on the field. So I think it's a guy that, especially if you're a desperate running back, is someone you should target.
Anything to add, Jared?
Yeah, no, Billy's right. Chuba was beating Sanders in like basically any rushing metric you want to look at, you know, even before last week. There's actually been quite a few running back targets to go around in Carolina. That's probably going to continue again because the wide receivers are struggling behind Adam Thielen. So, yeah, I could definitely see Chuba being like a weekly RB2 the rest of the way, especially if, you know, Sanders remains out.
We're over an hour here, guys. Jared, why don't you take us out? Give us one more guy you're excited about rest of the season.
Oh, you're killing me, Theo. That's all I had.
Pivot over to Billy.
Evans, Hollywood, and Montgomery.
Billy's got a few of them.
I got one more, and we'll close it out with
but it can't be Darrington Evans, Billy.
It can't be Darrington Evans. Right when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in. No, it's Jordan Addison. We don't know how long we're going to see Jefferson out. I mean, Jefferson could potentially just say, you know what, guys, I'm hanging up the cleats. I'll see you guys next year. You know, and I don't think that'll happen, but it is a possibility. In the meantime, Addison is going to be the wide receiver one. We saw him, 17% of the targets last week, and you know, definitely the score. I think if we continue to see him climb in that target share, we see him close to that 20%, and if it continues to climb, he's going to be a potential back end wide receiver one a week to week basis, probably high end wide receiver two, but has the ability to really kind of shine and step forward as that rookie that we all drafted. So, like his chances, like his odds, like the volume, the passing attempts here for Minnesota, trailing game scripts. There's a lot of things to like with Jordan Addison the rest of the season.
Jared, let everybody know where they can find your work.
Yeah, draftsharks.com. And I am at SmolaDS on Twitter. Thanks for having me back on, guys. It was fun.
Yeah, no, for sure. And we highly recommend all of Jared's work. Definitely check it out. Some really, really strong stuff over there. And you guys have some very sharp people at Draft Sharks, so just keep it going. Billy, let everybody know where they can find you, and also remind everybody about what you're doing Saturday night.
Yep, I've been hiding behind the curtain lately, dealing with a bunch of backstage things for Player Profiler. A lot of exciting announcements coming here in the first quarter of next year, so keep your eyes and ears peeled for that. Dominator will be here probably 6 or 7 p.m. Pacific, so that's 9 or 10 p.m. Eastern. We'll announce it here as we get closer to Saturday once Bradley and I touch base on the schedules, and we'll get that going for you. But so start sit AMAs on Saturday. Make sure to hit us up there.
Yeah, and definitely check out Billy occasionally, and then Dario Offstein and myself. We're doing Reddit AMAs as well. We've been announcing those. Those have been very cool. A lot of fun. Billy, let everybody know where they can find those.
Yep. You can go to Reddit. It's on Tuesdays. What is it?
2 p.m.
2 p.m. Thank you. 2 yep. p.m. And there's always a thread in there. You can ask them there and we get them answered. So.
Yeah, no, for sure. And a reminder, The Dominator, that's not a podcast. You got to tune in right here on YouTube to check it out on Saturday evenings. And check out my episode of Press Coverage this week. I had Alan Soslowski and Jim Coventry. We covered a lot of different players, but you know, similar relevant topics. And then tomorrow, 10 o'clock Eastern time in the morning, Matt Kelly, the Podfather, Alan Soslowski, and I are going to be doing a Sonic Truth Dynasty podcast. I'm sure we're going to talk a little bit about Rashad White and a couple of the guys from a dynasty perspective. That should be a lot of fun. And then tune in every week for First Class Fantasy. Most weeks we're at 3:30 Eastern time on Thursdays. Next week we should be right about this 12:30 Eastern time. So look for an announcement for that. Let's win these weeks, guys. Let's crush week 7. Let's win some titles rest of the season. Let's win some
speaking
money.
Speaking of 7, Theo, did you see the Podfather Challenge before we hang up? Did you see the email?
I saw it. It's pretty cool. Why don't you tell everybody about it?
Okay, so it's with one of our partners, Bet Openly. We're doing a weekly challenge where you have to pick 7 money lines. If you get all 7 right any given week, of course, you win the entire pot. Whoever has the most picks any given week wins the pot. It's $10 to enter. The first 25 people to enter, I will personally Venmo you $10 as well to pay for your first entry. The other piece is that if you get 7, I mean, because hitting 7 money line bets is very tough. But if you get 7, you get a 1-year subscription to Player Profiler.
There you go, guys. Not only do you win a bunch of money, but you also get a Player Profiler subscription. You got to hit 7 money lines, though, guys. That's the operative one. Look for it on Player Profiler YouTube as well. And let's crush it this week, guys. Thanks for tuning in.
Hey, I want to take a moment to thank you for tuning in. It's important to me that all of our media be free. This is only possible because of you, allowing a true independent sports media enterprise to thrive unlike any other in the business. So please subscribe to the All-In Package to continue to make all of this possible, to ensure that all of our stats, information, data, content is available to you, especially you, the people that get the site and get the show.